Welcome, everyone. Sorry for the delay. As you know, we've been in session, and some of the members are just checking things at their office and should be here soon. We have several items today on a revised schedule, and the first item will be Senate File 2051, Senator Dahl. Welcome back to the committee, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Glad to be here. Yeah, the meeting went a little bit long this afternoon, the session here, but I'm glad that we have an opportunity here. We'll try to be somewhat brief, though. This is important, I think, based on, especially since going off of this afternoon's session. Senate File 2051 is an act relating to education and requiring school districts to report student achievement. And the Minnesota legislature has validated the importance of a well-rounded education for our students by implementing requirements for academic standards in six areas: reading, math, science, social studies, PE, health, and the arts. Students need these skills and knowledge in all these areas to be successful as adults. And only three of these academic areas are subject to state tests, and only two, reading and math, are the focus of federal reporting under No Child Left Behind. And districts and administrators are diverting resources in an attempt to increase test scores at the expense of other important curricular areas. In Minnesota, nationally, we know that instructional time in the arts has decreased, class loads have increased for art educators, and art educators have been required to teach reading and math in their classrooms. This Senate File 2051 is asked for a straightforward remedy, that each district include evidence of student achievement for academic standards in non-tested areas. With me to speak on this is Doug Orzelak, Zane Schaefer, and Nicole Swanson. At this point, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Orzelak.
Thank you, and welcome to the committee. Please state your name, each of you, for the record.
Thank you. My name is Doug Orzelak. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm currently the president of the Minnesota Music Educators Association and a member of the Arts Education Consortium of Minnesota. AECM was formed 2 years ago by all of the associations that represent arts education in Minnesota, including the visual arts, media, creative writing, dance, theater, and music. The group, which represents nearly 5,000 arts educators and the educational interests of every student in this state, has been meeting monthly with the goal of advocating for arts education with a unified voice. Accountability has become the most significant issue in the field of education, and we are well aware of its impact and its impact on student lives. The arts, by state law, are a required component of a high school diploma in this state, and we're grateful for the state's recognition of the importance of the arts in the education of our students, communities, and state. Minnesota's arts education programs are the envy of many other states, and we aim to maintain that status. Even with that element in place, arts education programs and many other curricular areas are being reduced and eliminated to find additional time for test preparation. With that in mind, AECM placed accountability at the top of its platform of issues. Specifically, AECM desires that the state hold districts accountable to meeting all of the academic standards that are required by state law, including those in the arts. Currently, districts indicate compliance in non-tested areas by simply placing a check mark on the state's accountability report. Districts are not required to provide anything else. The language of this proposal asks that the state school districts report evidence of student achievement for all required academic standards that are not subject to state tests. It's hoped that the proposal will require districts to take the arts more seriously and suspend the practice of casting the arts aside in favor of more time for test preparation. I can't imagine anybody in our state who does not wish to see greater accountability from schools relative to meeting required standards and providing the highest quality education available to Minnesota students. I'll even go out on a limb and guess that each of you included accountability of schools as one of the major parts of your candidacy platform. While you desire accountability for every aspect of education, I am confident that you are wondering three things. How can we make this happen? What will this look like, and how much will it cost? Before I offer my thoughts on those questions, I would ask you to consider the ways in which you currently determine the success of a school's arts education program. Do you look at the pictures your children bring home and cast a judgment? Do you consider the trophies awarded to a music group as a measure of success? Or perhaps you base your judgment on the lack of concerned parent phone calls about a dance or theater program. While those may be an indicator of sort, our state's arts teachers can share much more about student learning than that. We can help define great arts education, what it's all about. The answer to the how question is actually easier than it sounds. If this proposal becomes law, arts educators and those in other non-tested areas will need to provide their districts with exemplary data and information that presents a clear picture of how students are meeting the state standards. You'll note the broad nature of the proposal's language. The intention is to allow educators to choose the assessments and the means of reporting that best fits the needs of their students and communities. Arts educators have considered the question, the what question, for years. While many consider the arts to be a subjective content area, our state's arts educators and the state's Arts Quality Teaching Network, led by the Purpich Center for Arts Education, have been blending the subjective and objective aspects of an arts education with great success. We are well prepared to help the state, school district leadership, and arts educators review and consider what will best indicate and report strong evidence in learning the arts. And when it comes to costs, my best guess is this will cost nothing. Someone in the school will need to collect the evidence of student learning, call together a committee of reviewers from within the school system, and decide to the extent which students are learning in the arts and the degree to which statewide standards are being met. Exemplars can be easily provided via the internet and other technologies that already exist. I suppose you're also wondering if this proposal means more work for teachers. My answer would be that good arts educators are already doing this as a matter of regular practice. They can tell you and explain the progress of each and every student in their schools right now. The problem is that no one's asking for that information. In a moment, you'll meet Zane Schaefer, who is a music educator from Annandale, who will share his experience as a means to explain this further. And to further testify to the importance of an arts education, we have Miss Minnesota with us, Nicole Swanson, whose platform is Music is Instrumental. Finally, I would add that where we find good arts education in our state, you'll find a high-achieving school. And where you find high-achieving schools, you'll find a really strong school district. And a state with strong districts will continue to rank amongst the best in the country and in the world. We feel that this proposal will help meet that goal. But even more important than that, it will help ensure that our state will be providing the high-quality education that our students truly deserve, and will have the evidence to prove it, too. Following the presentations of my colleagues, we'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Orslein. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Zane Schaefer. This is my 36th year of being an arts educator in the state of Minnesota, most of those years spent at the high school in Annandale as a music teacher. I want to state that I agree wholeheartedly with my good colleague, Doug, that we need some sort of legislative tool to hold all schools accountable to those standards in all academic areas. My experience as a teacher is that some schools are doing a pretty good job with art standards work, some are doing okay, and some, quite frankly, aren't doing much of anything at all. It is my opinion, and I think the opinion of most, that all students in Minnesota deserve quality experiences in all of those required arts areas. Today, I think as an arts educator, I can serve you best by sharing the kinds of assessments that I have used, ways to gather evidence on the art standards. And these are things that, number one, provide better experiences in arts for kids. And number two, they provide a framework for professional development for teachers. I would like to have you refer, if you would, to the brightly colored sheets, because these are tools that I've used in my classroom. I've developed these with the help of the Purpich Center. And in the interest of time, I'm just going to give you a quick look at what these are all about. If you would like more details, I'd be more than happy to share those with you, either now or later. The first thing that you see is a music skills assessment. And this I have used because it defines quality for myself as a teacher as to these skills, and also for the students in our school. Our students use these to self-assess themselves and their peers. The second thing that you see is what we call a rehearsal plan. That's on the back of that shocking yellow sheet. And this rehearsal plan shows me as a teacher that my students understand what it means to be an artist. And it also shows their ability to solve problems. That's one of the things that I'm trying to focus on in arts education, is problem-solving skills. And going quickly, the third thing that you will see, and that's on the pink, says rehearsal log. I think it might actually be the last sheet. They might have gotten stapled upside down. And the rehearsal log is what a student would prepare as they go about preparing music. And this shows an understanding about the artistic processes that students would have. And it also gives me evidence as to whether the student is getting feedback from myself or other students and what they're doing with that, trying to answer the question, well, what next now as I'm preparing this music? The final thing is a rubric that we have developed, and this helps me as a teacher to use that evidence and come up with some ideas about what I'm doing as a teacher, how my instructional skills are being successful or perhaps not so successful, and what I can do to improve. It also clearly defines for the students exactly what it is that they should be working on. These are just some ways. These aren't the only ways, but these are some ways that we gather evidence on art standards, achievement evidence in our school. In my opinion, these are valid and effective ways to do that. I know for sure that this process has helped our students have a better experience in art, in music, and I know it's made me a better teacher. It's really fun for me to sit down with parents and talk to them about this is the music knowledge that your son or daughter has. These are the skills that they have. These are their abilities to reason and do critical thinking and solve problems. I really, as I stated before, think that all students in Minnesota deserve quality experiences, especially in arts, and asking schools to present evidence of student achievement for standards in non-tested areas will help to make that happen. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Schaefer.
I should have probably done this earlier, but the alerted me to it. There is an amendment I can make on the shape that I wanted, and I don't have it printed, but it's a verbal amendment.
Okay.
Simply changing one word on line 1.12, changing the right here from description to evidence of student achievement.
Okay, on Senator Dahl at 1.13, delete the word description and insert evidence.
1.12.
And Senator Jungbauer makes that amendment. All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Prevails. Okay, please continue.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Nicole Swanson. I am the current Miss Minnesota. It's been almost 10 months since I was first crowned, and I've been working throughout my year.
A little closer to the mic, please.
Sure.
Thank you.
Did hear you. Can you all hear me now? Throughout my year as Miss Minnesota, I have been working to promote specifically music education, but also arts education throughout the state of Minnesota. I feel lucky enough to have been blessed with a very well-rounded education in my life. I was in a variety of extracurricular activities, from Science Olympiad to speech to choir, and I achieved considerable academic success throughout my life. I was a valedictorian of my high school. I was in the top 2% of both ACT, SAT, PSAT, and I truly attribute a lot of that success to the fact that I have been surrounded by the arts since I was a young child. I started playing the violin when I was 4, and I switched to the viola 2 years later because I had parents who really encouraged me and supported me in that. And I know that I am representative of a lot of people in this country who have had that background in the arts, because it is proven that arts and academic achievement do go hand in hand. The former president, Gerald Ford, once said that the future of our nation depends on providing our children with a complete education. And I think that's absolutely true, and that needs to include the arts. So I think that anything that we can do to make sure that our children are getting a complete education and aren't just being focused on parts of it, I think that will help the future of our nation, as the late president said. Thank you.
Thank you, and congratulations on all your accomplishments. Questions? Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And Mr. Chair, this question might be for you. Because I have not been on the policy committee for a long time, so I have a concern that this bill, the way it is drafted, does not fully get at what Senator Dahl is trying to accomplish, in that I suspect that there are many academic areas that we have standards, but maybe our state assessments don't get at. For example, I don't think our state assessments right now get at social studies. And so I'm concerned that this language, being so broad, will not narrowly get what Senator Dahl is trying to accomplish, which is a focus on the arts. And I know from the testifiers who came to my office, also physical education. So I'm wondering if we wouldn't be better off actually adding a phrase that says with a primary emphasis on the arts and physical education.
Let the author consider that as well as counsel and but Senator Rummel, I believe you pulled out the statute as well, which is referenced.
I did.
And
did you want to respond to Senator Bonoff?
Well, I'll have you respond if you'd like.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff, we think the arts education could lead this for the entire state. We really and truly believe we can lead this for all of the other academic areas. And thus, we've been talking to the other academic areas. We've been visiting with them. They're not sitting at the table, but we believe they'd go along with us.
Sarah Rummel.
First of all, thank you for bringing this topic to our attention. A lot of people don't know this, but I was an art teacher for about 4 or 5 years, and art is something that's near and dear to my heart. And I do believe that the arts do, in fact, help us raise student achievement. And I can tell you a lot of stories, but we have many other things to get onto today. Senator Dahl and anyone else who wishes to answer this, see if I'm understanding this correctly. In your line 1.12, you're asking us to refer to a different part of the rule, and I'm going to read that to you. And then my question is, how do you see this happening, or are you looking also to change this section? So the part of the rule you refer to says, the arts for which statewide or locally developed academic standards apply as determined by the school district, and I assume it includes any of the arts, public elementary, middle schools, must at least offer 3 and require at least 2 of the following, and then it names dance, music, theater, visual arts. Public high schools must offer at least 3 and require at least 1 of the following, and then it names 5 areas, media arts, dance, music, theater, and visual arts. So that's the section you're referring to? And so my question is, how would you... Would this be a descriptive thing that each local school district would describe what they are offering and how students are measuring up? Because there is the development of the standards is local, or are you asking us to have state-developed standards?
Mr. Chair, Senator
Rummel. Mr. Roslick.
There are statewide standards for all of these academic areas, yes. And what you've described in the law is correct. The problem is no one is reporting on their success and or failure on those standards. What we're hoping for is that the school districts begin to go beyond just checking a box that says, oh, we offer 3 arts. We'd like them to start describing what those students are actually learning in those arts programs and all the other academic areas.
Thank you, and I happen to agree with you. I do think when we have to report, when we have to be specific about what's going on, that the work does get done. So I would support your proposal here.
Senator Torres-Ray, Senator Jungbauer, Senator Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for any of the witnesses. I don't have a problem with supporting this, but I am telling you right now that you're going to have an achievement gap when you receive the reports. I can tell you that right now. Many of the students that we now are at risk, low-income students and children of color, will fail this. I work with a number of schools in the past with my children's schools. We didn't have instruments for the class. Their parents didn't have instruments. They've never attended a class. The parents had no skills, and my question is, do you really believe that reporting this will make a difference for that? That letting the public know that these children are failing, just like we do with other things, will make any difference?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Torres-Ray, my answer is yes. Right now, there's nothing. There's absolutely nothing that's happening. There's no reporting mechanism whatsoever for any of these areas.
I can only, I would hope that a bad baseline score or a rather negative report would be an impetus for us to improve. Right now we have nothing. We have no data. We have no information because school districts aren't required to provide that information. There is strong evidence, and I believe it's been passed out to you, some examples of evidence of student learning, some other arts education facts about its impact on that achievement gap. And we think we put arts education into these, if we ensure arts education in the schools and we require school districts to report on those things, we think the achievement gap will improve.
Could you tell me how it would improve? I think that, you know, Mr. Chair, and putting resources into this area, I think, will improve. Mm-hmm. Reporting, how would that improve?
Mr. Chair, Senator Torres-Ray, we've got to start somewhere. We've got to start somewhere. And we're just hoping that if there's evidence provided to the state, to the communities, and to those involved with the school districts, if they're made aware that the arts education program is failing, that it's not doing well, that there'll be a call and a cry to improve things. I can guarantee you that the Arts Education Consortium of Minnesota will be there to do that. But we have nothing right now. We have no information whatsoever.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Torres-Ray.
Sure.
I don't believe it. I think that we're failing our kids in many ways. I think this is really going to add to the statistics. This information is going to be added to the many statistics we have about how we fail our kids in many areas. What I think is going to work is if you work with us to increase resources for these children. You don't need research. You don't need this evidence. You have anecdotal evidence that we can give you in every school right now to do just this, and you already know this. That's why you're here today, to ask for that information. And what I think we need is to advocate for resources for these children, more than data. We advocate for data all the time. So I just want you to know I feel very strongly about this. It's very important that we go beyond asking the districts to put together the data. We actually need to respond to the needs of these children.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Dahl. Senator Torres-Ray, actually, I think she got me sidetracked for a minute there because I'm hoping she's wrong there. Having done ministry around the world, when we go to another country to minister to kids, the first thing we do is bring in music and the arts because that's the way to connect kids. That was a key for myself in education. What a lot of you new people don't know is I was a former full-time musician. Music and the arts do draw kids in, and we do have written evidence of that in terms of ministry, of what it does to bring kids in. But I guess I was really just looking for a clarification here that all you're really getting to is to actually provide some documentation, some reporting mechanism, some way to keep track of what's going on. Am I following that right?
Senator Chair, Senator Jungbauer, yes, that's correct. Yes.
Okay, because Mr. Chair and Senator Dahl and members there, my daughter actually goes to St. Francis High School in choir, and they do document this type of thing. And that's I'm going to be leaving the committee early tonight because she has a concert. Mm-hmm. So I have to leave early. But I think this is a good thing, and I like the rubric you have here because I think that's kind of the key, to give some kids some goals and stuff to bring them along. But I don't think that education, that you can do well at the rest of education without arts, music, and other types of visual and communication arts and things.
Thank you. Senator Saltzman.
I'm on the same point, Mr. Chair, but just perhaps a different perspective. I'm a son who's played the string bass for 11 years and a daughter who's played the violin for 8. But I have a different perspective in that I think that when children look at art as strictly high performance, it is something that when I look at the orchestra at Stillwater High School, that for many of the kids who are taking 4 AP classes, it's their time to be themselves. It is their time to experience something, and art brings joy into life. And if what we're going to do with this is start talking about precisely and consistently, I can't even begin to tell you the number of times that when I have gone to hear our high school orchestra perform, people said they should never have been able to play that piece of music. well, it didn't sound the same as, say, the Minnesota Orchestra, but to us it did, as parents. And so I fully support the arts, obviously, but I'm just a little concerned by kids start saying, if I can't be good in it, I won't do it. It's why kids don't take that higher level math. And if we look at these things as we're now going to make sure that you're always shooting higher, I'm just a little concerned because art brings something to everyone, and you don't have to be perfect to enjoy it. So I look at this and just have some caution. But at the same time, arts programs are the ones that are being cut. And I think just in Invergrove Heights or Mendota Heights recently, they looked at some cuts. I know in Stillwater, if we don't have a feeder system in fifth and sixth grade, there goes the orchestra program. So it's really about funding, and I think that that's where we need to focus our attention because I'm afraid we're going to lose our numbers if we just look at performance.
Chair, Senator Salzman, on that point, I think that's really the idea here, though, is that as we put our focus and attention on the math, science, and technology, that the arts is going to continue to be slip further and further behind. It's going to be an easy one to cut. And as long as we're keeping some attention on it, that it's not going to be allowed to do that. We'll still be able to keep it in that mix. And then the next step will be to find that funding.
Is there anyone in the audience that would like to address the committee? And I believe that there is a fiscal note on this for any reporting, and so it would need to go to finance. We've had different points of view as to the direction of an additional report, I believe. Everyone agrees that more resources should be provided for schools for additional options, and the merit of the program is without question.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Olsen.
One of the music teachers in one of my school districts has always said that if we want kids to do better in math and science, teach them music. So, with that, I would move that Senate File Number 2051 be approved by this committee and moved to finance.
Okay, on Senator Olsen's motion, and now we had a lot of reflections on music in our life, and with Miss Minnesota here, I wanted to share that our oldest daughter, Jessie, she went to the Miss Minnesota pageant. This was 24 years or so ago, watching, and Jessica Carlson, I believe, was playing her violin. She says, "I want to play the violin, Daddy," and she was like three, and she went on to the Youth Symphony after 4 or 5 years of lessons, and so I'm a believer. Further discussion? If not, all in favor, indicate aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Thank you very much, Senator Dahl,
sure.
Testifiers. Senator Rest.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Gretchen Carlson, my cousin.
That's why you're so good looking.
Was it Gretchen Carlson?
Gretchen.
Okay, great.
Yes.
Thank you.
From Anoka, yes.
She's on Fox.
Welcome, Sandra Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And you have two bills. Would you like them in order on the agenda?
You have a minute.
Okay. Senate File 1393, Supplemental Education Service Provider Rule Amendment.
Mr. Chairman, members, a couple of years ago, the legislative auditor did a report on the way in which supplemental providers' applications were being handled by the Department of Education, and made a recommendation that not only should the applications be reviewed and the standards under which they should be reviewed, but that the they should also the recommendation was to submit a plan to the House and Senate committees about an outlining how it would go about monitoring the quality and effectiveness of supplemental education service providers. The experience has been that that has not been fully complied with, and so what this bill does is to add language in the substitute, in the statutes that would not only, that not only sets up the requirements for the vendors, which include school districts, by the way, but also sets up the way in which they those particular programs would be monitored as to the quality and effectiveness of the vendors themselves. So the bill itself asks that the Commissioner of Education, or actually requires the Commissioner of Education, to amend the rules under which the vendors are awarded their grants or contracts for setting up those supplemental services, and to indeed assess the effectiveness of those programs. So I have with me Dr. Heisted from the Minneapolis School District, and would appreciate your listening to his testimony on this bill.
Thank you, Senator Rest. Welcome, Dr. Heisted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is David Heisted. I'm the Executive Director of Research Evaluation Assessment for Minneapolis Public Schools. My testimony will be brief. I have had a chance to give similar testimony at the House. The main purpose of this bill is to fulfill what the No Child Left Behind Act intended with the provisions for supplemental services, that they be thoroughly evaluated. It is the responsibility of the state to conduct such evaluations and to make evidence public so that parents, families of students in schools who are not making adequate yearly progress can have full knowledge of the effectiveness of the interventions. To date, we've done a couple of evaluations in Minneapolis schools and have found limited evidence of effectiveness with a number of the vendors. However, those are just a few of the vendors that are available throughout the state of Minnesota. And so I highly support efforts to increase the evaluation of the effectiveness of supplemental services and to make sure that such evaluations are rigorous evaluations. And the bill does indicate that the vendors for reading or mathematics not only show effectiveness on their own assessments that are built into the program, but on the state assessments that are really the high-stakes kind of tool that's used for determining whether students are reaching the standards. So vendors need to provide information to parents, but the state needs also to verify that the students in those programs are making progress towards the standards. And I'd be glad to take any questions the committee.
Questions of the committee. Senator Olsen.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, you are perhaps one of the best policy people I've met down here. 1-14 doesn't
I think I hear
read...
a but coming.
But four, 1.14 doesn't read real good to me. I mean, for law, I don't know if that's...
Mr. Chairman and...
Senator Rest.
Senator Olsen, I stumbled over disentangle, too, as if that would be a physical thing that they could do with the supplemental... with the impact of the supplemental education, and I certainly would welcome a more transparent and language there that gets at the what we're really trying to ask them to do. And I'm sorry that I don't have that language right now, but I absolutely agree with you, particularly under the at line 114. I do think that the crucial thing here.
Senator Rest, a little closer to the mic, please.
I'm sorry. I think the one of the critical things here is that there be a process in the rules by which approval can be removed from which is the first paragraph there, and then there are additional requirements that they're asking the amended rule to include. But I think you give people 2 years to make a difference, and under No Child Left Behind, and then the department should have a process for removing approval. And that includes where school districts are the vendors as well. But I would certainly welcome Senator Olson if you had language that would fix this.
Well, Senator Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, you could just use the word separate instead of disentangle. Or else you could say how they will determine the separate impact, the separate impacts. You could be plural there of these two areas. How they will determine the separate impacts of supplemental education and that of regular school instruction on students' academic performance.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, either way, I mean, either just delete, disentangle, and insert separate, or if it's clearer to the committee, the language that you suggested would.
I think
would
the
be
second
fine.
One maybe does. You're trying to identify that there are individual or distinct effects
of
or
these,
impacts.
I prefer of effect, the supplemental programs from the. Yeah. From what is already going on in the school, and then it truly does make a difference, and not try and give to the effects of the supplemental programs in making progress where the progress is being made in the regular instruction, able to distinguish the two.
And Mr. Chairman, I think effects rather than impact would be a better word.
Okay, we'll revisit that shortly. Senator Bonoff, as we develop an amendment.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rest and Senator Olson, I thought of two choices. One would be we'll distinguish, thinking that really we're trying to say that there's a distinction between the two. So we'll distinguish the impact or differentiate the impact of special education from the impact. I think maybe even differentiate might.
And Mr. Chairman, I would still prefer the word effect rather than impact.
Mr. Chairman, I agree, the impact can be bad or good in a sense. But if it's distinguishing the effectiveness of supplemental education from the effectiveness of school instruction on students' academic performance, that would seem to me to
distinguish
meet Senator Olson's objection.
Are we at your
to the
standard?
Elegance of this bill.
Senator Olson, would you like to restate?
Mr. Chairman, I think that I like
at line 1.14.
Senator Bonhoff's use of the words distinguish the respective effects of supplemental education and that of regular school instruction on students' academic performance.
And I'll ask Ms. Butler if she would just restate that and what is deleted, and if
she can make it sound better, that's.
Mr. Chair, members, I believe we would on 1.14 delete disentangle and insert distinguish, and then also on 1.14 delete impact and insert effect, and as well as on 1.15 delete impact and insert effect. And I believe that encompasses everything the members were talking about.
Does that capture the spirit of the guidance, Senator?
Yes.
Rest, is
thank
that
you.
Okay?
Simple.
And Mr. Okay. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, does Senator Olson approve?
Okay. On Senator Olson's amended motion, all in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Same sign. Carry. We now have Senate File 1393 as amended. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to address the committee?
If not, Senator Bonoff moves that Senate File 1393 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to State and Local Government Oversight Committee. Further discussion? Not all in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
All same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you. And Senator Ress, we now have Senate File 1374.
And Mr. Chairman, there is a delete everything amendment.
Delete all will be distributed. And when it's in front of you, we'll move that. Senator Lynch moves that the A1 amendment, the delete everything, be moved to Senate File 1374. It's an author's amendment. All in favor indicate aye.
Aye. Aye.
All same sign. Motion prevails. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 1374 is a proposal to authorize, I'm sorry, I'll speak up, authorize pre-kindergarten programs for four-year-olds and are in the year in which before which they become eligible to attend kindergarten, and to require interested school districts to apply to the commissioner for such programs. It sets up pupils that are participating in these programs to be counted as 0.577 of a pupil unit for the purposes of calculating state aid, and then it repeals the current school readiness programs. Subdivision 2 sets out the program characteristics for these pre-kindergarten programs. Subdivision 3 sets the pupil eligibility so that they have to be at least 4 years old on September 1 of the given year, and that they have completed the developmental screening and that they qualify for free and reduced lunch or they are English language learners. And that's about, that's the sum and substance of what it does. And I have people to testify here about the attractiveness for dealing with these pre-kindergarten students to make them better ready for kindergarten and also the characteristics that the program would have.
Thank you. Welcome to the testifier, Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, our developmental screening program is optional for parents. That's a critical component to it. So I'm concerned that you have, as part of being eligible, that they've completed the developmental screening.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bonoff, I'll let the testifiers indicate why that should be a necessary element of this particular pre-kindergarten program, and maybe it should not be. But I hope you'll listen to their testimony about why it's important.
Thank you.
Okay, please proceed.
Hi, welcome. Good afternoon. I'm Maureen Seiwert, and I'm the Executive Director of Early Childhood Education for the Minneapolis Schools. And I'm here today to talk about the brightest, the most beautiful, the most diverse group of children in the state of Minnesota. That's who I work for. And we
thought they were in my district.
Well, they're other than my grandchild, they're all in the city of Minneapolis. Little babies, children birth to five, don't suffer from the achievement gap. We talk a lot about the achievement gap. We are very aware of it in the Minneapolis schools because we have quite a large one. But babies, birth to fivers, really suffer from the opportunity gap. You know, you talk about music earlier. Little children, birth to fivers, are very musical. They're very interested in music. They're very engaged in music, no matter what their ethnicity or no matter what their free and reduced price lunch status is. And so children, young children, really do not have all the same opportunities in order to gain the skills and the strengths that they need in order to be successful in school. I'm a new grandma, and I am the mother of five. I have a degree in child psychology. I sort of thought I knew all about children and babies, and Amelia was born. And since I had my children, babies aren't supposed to sleep on their stomach anymore. They sleep on their backs because of the danger of sudden infant death syndrome. And so doctors now prescribe what they call tummy time to new babies. She had to spend at least 15 to 20 minutes a day on her stomach and it was sort of ordered by the doctor, prescribed, so she could develop the strength in her neck and her arms and her stomach, so she could do, you know, how babies do when they're up and they learn how to crawl and they learn how to use their body by having the opportunity to spend time on their stomachs. That is physical development. Cognitive development is much the same. Children have to have the opportunity to practice, to be exposed, to have time to play and learn and talk and all the things that come with a good, high-quality early learning experience. Many, many children, especially children in poverty, do not have that opportunity. And so our interest in the Minneapolis schools is providing our children with the opportunities they need to be ready for school and to be able to be successful as they move up into third grade and beyond. And so it's about closing the achievement gap, but it's really about closing the opportunity gap, because all of those beautiful, bright babies deserve the opportunities, the same opportunities, to be successful and to go and to be able to do all the things that you've been able to do in your life and your children are able to do. And the question related to early childhood screening, how we utilize early childhood screening in the Minneapolis schools, is that it is required of all children upon entrance into school that they show evidence that they've had either early childhood screening through our screening or through a doctor's office if they've had a developmental screen in their doctor's office. That tells us which children, early on, our goal is to get children screened at age 3 so that we can tell which children might be at risk for having some challenges and not being ready for school. So we really try to work with those families to get their, if it's a hearing need, if it's a vision need, if it's a school readiness need, to get those children connected to resources that can support their healthy growth and development, and so that when they reach kindergarten, all of those needs that have been identified have really been supported and really in many cases taken care of before they end up before they start school. So I want to introduce you to Annie Pearson. Annie Pearson is a master teacher in early childhood education for the Minneapolis schools, and she has spent many, many years working with these wonderful, beautiful young children who are really going to be our future. So I would like to introduce Annie.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Annie Pearson. I've been a teacher in Minneapolis for 28 years. I've taught kindergarten. I taught in a high five program for 14 years. I went back to kindergarten for a year when funding was cut, and now I'm here speaking on behalf of all of the children of Minneapolis. I'm here because I am so passionate about what a good, high-quality preschool education can mean for the development and the growth and the achievement of our kids. Maureen talked about her granddaughter's tummy time. And I look at some of the siblings of the kids that I'm working with, and they're maybe not getting the tummy time. It's not because their families don't want it for them. It's because they don't know or they don't understand. It's because the places that they go and the way they travel, carrying their children in a bucket, you know, one of those seats, seems safer. But it is really about, maybe the apartments or the places where they're living, tummy time doesn't always feel safe to them. Those opportunity gaps stay with us. And Minneapolis has High Five, which has really been something that we've put in to really try and change that for kids. It's a high-quality, literacy-focused early childhood program for four-year-olds. It's designed to boost children's school readiness. We have it targeted at the neediest kids in our district by where we place it. We place it in the schools with the highest poverty levels. It's a really successful and high-demand program. High Five kids consistently outperform district averages on the beginning of kindergarten assessments. Some of that data is in the information that we shared with you. And that's regardless of income status. If you look at who we're recruiting to our High Fives, we're getting kids who are from a higher level of free and reduced lunch homes. We're recruiting kids that are coming from, very varied ethnicities. We've got more ELL kids than the district average, and with those challenges, they're still performing better on their testing. High Five's popularity is evident. Families want their kids in these programs. They don't want their kids to experience the achievement gap, and they see High Five as a way of helping their kids do better in school. We had 1,100 families apply for 300 High Five slots last year. When we do screening in Minneapolis, and we're doing those screenings that you talk about, one-third of the kids that are screened come up as being recommended for an early placement. Their screening results indicate that they need some help before they go to kindergarten. We don't have slots for all of them, but we do try to get as many of them into services as we can. When we look at our incoming kindergartners in Minneapolis, half of the kids don't look ready to be successful in kindergarten based on their kindergarten entry-level information. I know you've all read the articles. You know what early childhood, high-quality early childhood can do for kids. You've read Dr. Reynolds' information, and you've looked at those things. So I just want to share with you, because I'm a teacher, I carry children in my heart everywhere I go. So I brought some pictures. Some people have seen these before, but these are kids who are close to my heart, and they're why I'm here today. I want you to meet Travel. The last year I was teaching High Five, Travel lived in two different homeless shelters and moved five times during one school year. He's what we call highly mobile. Every time his mother moved, she took buses. She did what she had to do to get him to school. When she was looking at apartments, she came in with the addresses and said, if I move here, can he still come to High Five? Because she wanted him to have the opportunity to do better in school. I had Munira, who, when school started, didn't speak any English, and by shortly after winter break, was making up word problems instead of eating her lunch. You can't see in the picture, but she's got goldfish crackers, and she would say, I've got two goldfish crackers and three more fish swim up. How many fish do I have? And she would, I had to stop her from writing in her pudding the number five. I've got Katya, and the reason I bring Katya with you and that I carry Katya in my heart is because when Katya came to High Five, I couldn't get her dad to come for conferences. I sent home notes, I called, I did everything, and he never responded. Finally, he dropped her off late one day. I yelled to another teacher to cover my class, and I kind of chased him down the hall saying, even if you don't have time for a conference, can I just talk to you as you walk to your car? And he said, I don't speak English. And I said, well, that's okay because I don't speak Spanish, but we'll find somebody who speaks both. And we did, and I told him what a wonderful child he had and what a great job he was doing of getting her to school and of all the things that she was learning. I said, the only thing that we could work on better together is if we could have her know how important schoolwork is at home. So if I send a book home, could you help her read it at home? And he said he didn't think he could because of the lack of English. I said, well, I'll send home a book that has a matching copy in Spanish. And I said, and I'll practice with her so she can read you the English story, just one word books. There's one word on each page, and you can read her the Spanish version. And I did that for a couple days, and he signed his name and sent it back. And then I got a note written in Spanish, and I brought it to the interpreter, and it said, please, could we have more books? I'm learning English, and we're learning to read, and she's learning to read. I'm so excited. And so we were sending home 10, 12, we got up to about 20 books a week that were going back and forth, and he did them every day. The next year, when it was open house night before school even started, Jonathan, Katya's cousin, showed up, and Jonathan's dad said, can we start getting those books so Jonathan can start getting smart right away, or do we have to wait till October? I sent some books home that night. Jonathan was reading 120 words per minute at the end of his first grade year. He was above where we expect him to be, and his family had helped him get there. But getting a chance to start a little bit ahead of other people had helped him get there, too. I'm really asking that you think about Jonathan and Jonathan's little brother and Jonathan's little sister whose parents are calling and saying, please, will there be High Five slots for our children this year? And I'm asking that you think about those children and the futures you can change. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Olson?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, you indicated that the program is already, the High Five is already running in Minneapolis, but is this an effort to make this a statewide program then, rather than just a Minneapolis program? Because you're essentially creating another kindergarten in terms of the eligibility for funding. it's the same level of funding as a as kindergarten for a four-year-old. So you're talking about what we've been talking about in terms of pre-kindergarten, as and all four of our caucus leaderships in early childhood had agreed that we wanted a strong parental choice element in it. For this essentially will make it a school-based program.
It's a rest.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson, and I certainly support programs that are out in the private sector being able to continue when we have this, when we're dealing with the pre-K programs. But it seems to me that the parents ought to be able to choose programs that are offered by a school district as well. And that bill I just had, in terms of talking about supplemental vendors for having effective impact or effect, good effects on kids, was a direct response to that as well. But I'll let this, it would allow school districts across the state to do it. Minneapolis is here because they have seen so much positive response to the programs that that they have. It seems to me that the school districts could be part of that experience as well. I don't see it as an either or myself. But you know, I haven't had the discussions that this committee has had on that, and I believe in lots and lots of flexibility for parents and for school districts and in other areas as well. But
Senator Olson, Minneapolis had this program a number of years ago. In fact, we operated it very successfully for many, many years. And the Department of Education, because of other districts, St. Paul, Robbinsdale, I think West St. Paul, a number of other districts also utilized the same funding that we had used for our High Five, which was very similar to the language in this law. But so it was the Department of Education, as other districts became more and more interested in it, decided we could not use that route of funding any longer. And so our program went from over 700 students a year to just over 300, and we have combined the use of school readiness dollars, Title I dollars, a levy. We have about a $75,000 levy, I believe. So it's a combination, and we have never been able to move it to the level of need. And I think the idea that a variety in parental choice is very important, that this is one option for families and that it's an option that families have really appreciated and found to be beneficial for their children. But because of the cuts over recent years, we've not been able to offer it ever to meet the demand. The other piece I think that's really important is the link that this program has with the K-12 system. I know that there's a lot of bills out there about K-12 hubs or the early childhood hubs and also the pre-K through 3 schools. One of the advantages of this program is that it is very much connected. The curriculum, the assessment, the professional development is all aligned with what is going on in kindergarten and first grade. In fact, Annie is a master teacher that works with both preschool and kindergarten. It's located in elementary buildings, and so that fit and that closeness and that ease of transition is already there, but there just isn't enough of it.
Senator Roman.
My question has been answered, Mr. Chair.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Rest, I just wanted to say this is a wonderful program. I have seen the results. I was a volunteer for kindergarten for many years, and this is great. And I would like to add my name to the co-authors because I'm particularly excited about language in lines 119 to 122, where you have language to make parents involved in this process, to create a plan designed by parents and teachers. And it is so essential that we involve parents with these young children. So I think this is a wonderful provision, and we need to have more of this throughout our policies, our education policies. So this is great.
Is there anyone in the audience that would like to address the committee?
Senator Olsen.
Mr. Chair, this is probably directed more towards you, and that's how does this fit into what we just did today in session?
It does need to be referred to finance, and Senator Rest, you're aware of that.
Hope springs eternal.
Yes. Hope, and it's a beautiful day, and
I appreciate the consideration.
We don't stop our ideas going.
Right. Yeah,
so we continue that in the process, and as Senator Rest says, hope springs eternal. Senator Bonoff? Senator Torres-Ray would like to move the bill and have it referred to finance.
Mr. Chairman, did you adopt a delete all amendment?
Yes, we did. Okay. So it would be Senator Torres-Ray moves that Senate File 1374 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Finance Committee. Further discussion? Not all in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. And thank you very much, Senator Ress and testifiers. We'll go next to Senator Rummel, Senate File 1904. And we have at least one of the testifiers from Greater Minnesota. And I believe that's the case for Senator Fischbach. I don't know if she's here yet, but I know she has a witness as well that's from outside the metro. So, Senator Rummel, Senate File 1904.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kui.
Yeah, that's right.
Senator Kui.
Yes, I've changed gender. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This bill is a bill about making the reporting of school progress and schoolwork more understandable to parents. I think it's about that simple. We are asking to reinstate the Office of Educational Accountability to stand as an independent party and help us create an advisory committee that will review the current report card so that it fully reflects the work of our schools. I think without much more ado, I'm going to turn this over to Mr. Ed Waltman, who is superintendent of Mankato Schools.
Welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Ed Waltman. I'm superintendent for Mankato Area Public Schools, and I'm here today to testify on behalf of this bill for our Mankato Area Public Schools Legislative Committee. Our legislative committee is a grassroots committee consisting of students, parents, community members, board members, and educators in our school district. Each year, we select a number of items related to K-12 education, which we wish to make changes, which we believe make sense. One of our priorities this session is to change the star ranking system on the school report cards. We believe that the ranking system, which is based on only one test per year, is flawed and not appropriate to rank schools on. We believe that research has shown that test data is highly unreliable. In fact, in our district, we use the term we need to triangulate data, at least have three different tests before we make any major decisions. In the case of the school report cards, we are ranking our schools based on one test per year, the MCA2 test. Differences in student body combined with statistical error in the tests themselves, and certainly we've seen that in the state of Minnesota over the past few years, make it extremely difficult to measure the accuracy over a short period of time on one test. And in addition, under current No Child Left Behind Act and current state law, if a school is not making adequate yearly progress, the most stars that it can receive is 2 stars. And I hope you have a handout from us. We wanted that. If you don't, the school report card in Mankato West High School is to be included in that handout, but I can describe it if you don't have that handout. Mankato West Senior High School is a school of 1,284 students in grades 9 through 12. This past year, it received a 5-star rating in the area of reading. In the area of mathematics, it received 2 stars because of one of its group of students, the special education group, did not meet adequately yearly progress. In this school of 1,184 students, there were 45 special education students. In other words, the star ranking for Mankato West High School was based on 3% of the total student population at that school. Mankato Area Public Schools consists of 7,000 students who attend 16 different school sites. On page 5, if you have a handout, there's a summary of the star rankings for our 16 school sites. 12 of the 16 sites received a 4- or 5-star ranking on the school report cards, so I can tell you we did very well. But even with that said, we believe this system is flawed and need to be changed. Senate File 1904 would make common sense changes in the school report cards. By the way, we believe that school report cards, even though they're mandated, we believe they're important. We think they offer a great deal of information to our citizens, and we encourage our citizens to look at that data. This change in this proposal would not eliminate the test data. The bar graphs with MCA2 results would not eliminate the status ranking on the school report cards, but would just eliminate the star ranking system. Finally, the bill does create an advisory committee under the Independent Office of Educational Accountability, which would consist of measurement experts that would develop the data to truly measure school performance. As a result, we believe that the work of this committee is extremely timely and very important, particularly when there are proposals to tie state funding to the star rankings on school report cards. I wish to thank you for this opportunity to testify on behalf of our Mankato Area Public Schools Legislative Committee.
Thank you, Superintendent.
Mr. Chair and members, I also have with me Darlene Bailey, who's from the University of Minnesota.
Darlene. Welcome.
Yes. Hello, and welcome to you all as well. I'm brand new to Minnesota, so welcome to my life. These are friends yet to be made. Thank you very much, Chair Wicker, and thank you, Senator Rummel, and members of the committee. I want to thank you for taking the time to allow us to talk just a little bit about Senate File 1904 related to the Office of Educational Accountability. As you may know, the college was the host of the OEA until 2005, and under the leadership of Dr. Mark Davison, the office provided high quality and objective data as requested by the legislator and by the Commissioner of Education. I'm very pleased to report that the College of Education and Human Development, which is the largest multidisciplinary college of its kind in the country, is willing to be the host for this new office that's outlined in this legislation. We have the capacity with several faculty members from multiple departments who have the appropriate backgrounds. We are able to work from multiple measures, therefore, to provide objective data. We are able to give advice on the use of the data, and we'll be able to be responsive to the legislator and to the MDE. We say it a little differently in New York. We will work closely with the commissioner and the MDE to carry out the requested functions and services in keeping with the University of Minnesota's long history of working collaboratively with the MDE on a wide range of projects. While we understand that the funding is not guaranteed past the biennium, we hope to build and maintain the capacity needed to manage the OEA and maintain stability. We believe it's important to be able to provide information to the education community for the benefit of our state's children and youth. In short, the college stands ready to provide high-quality research and evaluation of any education initiatives deemed necessary by our Commission of Education and by our Senate Education Policy Committee. Thank you very much for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you, and welcome to Minnesota.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to just give you one anecdote from our own school district. Thank you. A few years ago, we had a school that did
this would
not,
be White Bear Lake?
This would be okay. In White Bear Lake, I'm sorry, that did not make AYP. And when we went in and investigated, we had a medically fragile child who was absent from school on that day. And the child was in a subgroup of a small group. And because one child was missing, they did not have the right attendance number taking the test. And so that school did not get AYP, even though that was the school with the highest reading scores and the highest math scores in our district. And so the connection of STARS to the AYP gave an impression of the school that was completely inconsistent with the reality. And all we are asking for is to find a way, because we do want to be accountable, but we want to be accountable in a way that parents understand, and not every parent goes in and analyzes the report card bit by bit. They just look at those stars and they start comparing why this school got 2 stars, and it's really hard to explain to parents. So the goal is to find a way to adequately and accurately report the information that is required by law, and then to do it in a way that parents understand it. The Office of Educational Accountability is in statute. This is not something new. What is new here is that we are asking the office to be funded through the Board of Regents and the university, so that it's totally independent. If you have any questions, I'm sure my guests will help answer them. Thank you.
And we have one more testifier.
No, this is Associate Dean Mary Benz, who is technically my right hand, but she's sitting on my left side.
Okay. Thank you. Questions? Committee. I might note go first to Senator Lynch. And
thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Rummel. Maybe I missed this in your discussion, but do you have a preference, or is there a direction or here in terms of you talk about using multiple measures of growth. In some parts of this, you talk about value added, and in some parts, you talk about a growth model. And I don't think they're the same thing. And I'm wondering if what the real intent is.
That may be a little bit more technical than I can answer right now. I know that currently parents the public is looking for a growth model. The Department of Education is also working on a value-added model. They are 2 separate things. What I hope the Office of Education Accountability will help us do is, one, distinguish between those and help us figure out which ones are most useful to parents and which ones are most useful to us as we evaluate our system as a whole.
And on the floor today, as you know, and adopting Senator Lynch's amendment, and we previously have talked a great deal about the growth model, and the department, in fact, is going that way. And Superintendent, there has been a lot of frustration expressed, as you did, on the STAR system, and we're hoping to get better ways to reflect what the schools are doing and progress. So you're correct. There needs to be changes, and I'm certain there's going to be a great deal of continued study by a number of groups on this. And so, but you're right, and this has been reaffirmed in earlier testimony.
Mr. Chairman, thank you.
I believe I asked, but is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify on Senator Rummel's proposal? This would need to go to at least 2 more committees. And because there's funding involved, you know that's a bit of a Hail Mary, but we would next need to go to state and local government oversight. Senator Rest requested, or that would go there because of some of the requirements in the bill. And then finance would determine the next step.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I move that Senate File 1904 be passed and then sent on or re-referred to the
State and Local Government Oversight Committee. Further discussion? Not all in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you very much, Senator Rummel, and testifiers.
Thank you.
Is Senator Fischbach?
She was here a minute ago.
Okay, Senator Fischbach, though, she's trying to get it all put together, I understand, and that's good. Is Senator Pappas here? Senator Torres-Wright, we'll go to you next. And we now have before us Senate File 1956. And as Senator Torres-Wright approaches, I'll remind the committee Senate File 1791 actually was passed by the Senate last year. Welcome back again to the witness table.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members of the committee. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to present this bill before the committee.
Senator, a little closer to the mic, please.
Yes. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I am presenting Senate File 1956, which intends to address an increasing problem in the public schools, in general in the schools. These are sensitivities developed by children to chemical fragrances, which sometimes will trigger asthma and chemical sensitivities in students. One of the reasons I decided to support Representative Clark in this effort was because this issue is actually being pursued by children, young children who are having this problem and have tried very hard to work with their school principals and with others in the school to create some awareness about this issue because they suffer from asthma and have not been successful. And so Representative Clark shared with me was that we really need to be able to have a mechanism to raise some awareness about this. Some of us, really believe that this is related to problems that we have with our environment. People are becoming more and more sensitive to chemicals now, and we believe that these children are developing these sensitivities. And so that is the reason I'm here, to support these children's efforts and their parents' efforts to do something about this issue. And with me, I have a witness that would like to share with you some information and perhaps respond to some of the questions related to this bill.
Yes, I'm Alyssa Peterson. I'm a licensed psychologist. I also was director of guidance at the Holton Arms School for 10 years. And I'd like to speak a little bit about the importance of this bill. I believe that the issue before you is very similar to the questions raised regarding the rights of individuals to protect themselves from secondhand smoke. I think what we're beginning to see is that children are increasingly vulnerable. We have skyrocketing rates of asthma. It's just off the charts. Autism is very strangely also skyrocketing, as is the ADHD difficulty. And evidence is increasingly pointing to the fact that the children are on toxic overload. And this affects not only the breathing. Asthma is certainly a terrible difficulty. And again, the statistics show an immense increase in asthma. But also with the chemicals in fragrances, you see, and this is the most important because I don't think people fully understand this, there's an amazing array of cognitive difficulties that can occur for a child who's sensitive to fragrance, an agitation, a foggy headedness, an irritability. And what brought me here today, even though it was busy and I, in some respects, was reluctant to come, but I had in my mind the image of a young child, maybe a second grader, who is having a reaction to perfume without the words to understand it. And that 8-year-old could feel a wave of irritability, could no longer track what the teacher was saying, and might begin to poke his neighbor just for fun, and not understand that something has occurred in terms of the inhaling of these harmful chemicals. Kids are doused in fabric softener, perfume, the scent of the overpowering Lysol in the bathroom, the way the floor was mopped. All of this is toxicity. And we really need to address it in a forthright way. And for that reason, I think the fragrance-free schools pilot project is it makes so much sense. And if you look at the schools in Canada, they have begun to move very strongly in this direction. And in Minneapolis, we have the Faribault Middle School that has chosen to do a fragrance-free program. In the teacher's contract for this year, apparently fragrance was a concern to them. Obviously, they're in this school setting for many hours a day. And in the it's the teacher contract 05 to 07, Minneapolis Public Schools. It states, environmental issues are becoming an increasing concern for the health and safety of students and staff. An environment as free as possible of fragrances such as strong cleaning agents, perfumes, cologne, or scented lotions would be appreciated by those affected. While personal choices in the matter of scent is respected, the increasing number of students and staff who have an adverse reaction to these chemicals in their environment is growing. Cleaning agents, and it goes on from there, it creates breathing problems, lethargy, headaches, irritability. These reactions are not simply aversion or discomfort, but are medical in nature. And so because this is actually written within the teacher contract, it seems to me to make so much sense to push powerfully forward with the project.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I neglected to offer a delete all amendment. I'm sorry about this.
Okay, and Senator Torres Ray has an author's A1 amendment. All in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Same sign.
Thank you.
Prevails. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to address the committee? Is Mr. Grathwell here from Minneapolis Schools? And Senator Torres Ray, has there been discussion? This would be a pilot in Minneapolis Schools, and you know they could do this, but have you had a discussion with them about this?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my understanding is that Representative Clark has been talking to the district, and there was some opposition to the previous language, which basically will impose a ban on this, and so we decided to support an effort to create some awareness. So this pilot project is more working with the community, the teachers, the students, to make sure that we arrive to that place without, you know, imposing legislation. So there has been some conversations, of course, and that's how we arrived to this point.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Torres Ray and Ms. Peterson.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. I guess I'm not quite clear why we would need to do this at the legislature. Could not? Is there anything that would prohibit the Minneapolis School District from just doing this on their own? Why is the legislation needed to do this? If the school district wanted to create the pilot project, couldn't they just do that by board action? Why would they need to have legislation to do this?
Well, I think I don't represent the Mr. Chairman. I don't represent the Minneapolis school, but my hunch is oftentimes government has to take a major role in pushing forward against the status quo. And just as government played a role in the smoking ban, the fragrance issue is going to be a difficult one, just as that is. And I think it probably will need the backing of government to push it forward. And the protection of children, sometimes we have to rise above the school system alone and push from a higher place. And my hunch is that's probably going to be true here.
And Mr. Chairman.
Sir.
Mr. Chairman and Ms. Pearson and Senator Torres Ray, I guess I'm a little reluctant to impose a mandate, if you will, on a school district that, as a pilot, that isn't willing to do it on its own. If the school district doesn't want to do this, I'm a little reluctant to say, well, we as a legislature are going to force them to do this. And I understand the point you're making that there are issues with fragrances, but it would seem to me that if the board couldn't be convinced to deal with that, this is a much broader, we're trying to, I hope, act in the interests of all the people of the state, and I'm not sure that I'd be prepared to say, well, we're going to require one school district that doesn't want to do this to do it. As I read this, I don't know, there's no reason in my mind that the school district couldn't adopt this kind of program on its own under its own authority. So I'm not sure why the state legislature should come in and pass a law and, in effect, compel them to do that if they're not willing to undertake this pilot on their own. I guess the other thing maybe you can respond to, we did get a little memo that says memorandum in opposition. It does say that, and I don't know who this organization is, it's not a medical organization, but it quotes or it refers to the AMA, American Academy of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology, California Medical Association, saying that none of the concerns have any medical basis to them. So clearly there's a debate about the science here, which we're not prepared to probably resolve.
Mr. Chairman, in the end, this kind of debate will be settled on the side of the injured parties. Increasingly, you will see. And if we if there was an advocate here who had the data available, there is very powerful medical data to support certainly asthma and fragrance, and cognitive impairment in reaction to fragrance is also statistically, and you can find that information.
So, Mr. Chairman, just to be clear, the testimony we have by memo to the effect that the American Academy of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology refuses to recognize multiple chemical sensitivity as a disease of any kind, you're saying they're just wrong?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear
you. This memo quotes or refers to, and I understand this is sort of hearsay if we were in court, but it says the American Academy of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology, among some other organizations, have refused to recognize multiple chemical sensitivity or fragrance sensitivity as a disease. In other words, they are saying, in their view, it's not a problem that should be addressed in any kind of medical way. It might be a nuisance, or people may not like it, and so forth. I get from this that they're saying there's no medical scientific reasoning. I'm just trying to understand from your perspective, they're wrong on their judgment. Is that
your testimony? Mr. Chairman, Senator Hahn, I would like to respond to that. I don't want to take too much time away from the committee on debating the science behind this. What I think the question you have, Senator Hahn, about the district response, I think is a very legitimate question, and it's a very important one. And I have asked that myself. You know, why is that we're doing this from here and we're not approaching the board? The response that I got was that the youth and the parents who have been pursuing this have not been able to move precisely for the reasons that you're bringing to the committee today. There is this debate about science, and it happens with many issues. We're dealing now with a lot of issues related to mercury in vaccines. Whether or not it's scientifically proven or not is causing a tremendous problem in terms of public health. And this is similar. The science is debatable. I think what I wanted to respond to was more the concerns that parents of children who have asthma are bringing to my attention, and we're bringing to our attention, and I'm responding to that, and that's why we decided to do it very much as a campaign. We're not imposing this on the district as a, you must do it, you must, create some policy that bans fragrances and everything, because we do recognize the issues that you're talking about. But what I think was important for me was to respond to these concerns of parents that have a legitimate concern, and they want to do a campaign, and they are asking for our support to do it. So that's mostly my response to that. It's not, really trying to impose some legislation based on how I feel about science one way or the other, because the piece you're reading are people that represents the industry that clearly opposes these measures because we're going to be taking fragrances out, and a person who lost perfume like me will not do that.
Senator, we have four other senators that want to talk. I know that there's a caucus at the Republicans' call that
it's in process. We want to get through the agenda if we can, and I have some advice perhaps on where this issue would go, but we'll go first to Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Torres-Ray, thank you. For the record, I just wanted to clarify what Senator Hahn was talking about. He quoted the American Academy of Asthma, Allergy, and Immunology, but they're quoted within a document to us. That is not who the document is from. The document is from the Cosmetic Toiletry and Fragrance Association, and they reference another organization within their letter. So just to be clear, it's not from a medical association, professional association. They're just referenced within the letter. So I want to clarify that. And then also to speak just to Senator Hahn's question about whether the government should be involved in a pilot project like this, I think it is the role of the government to we do pilot projects all the time. We have ideas and just give a blessing to go ahead. Doesn't look like there's any money involved with this. Just go ahead, do a test site, you know, if you can get people to cooperate with it. I think we do that sort of thing all the time.
Okay. Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, Senator Torres-Ray, I know that Senate Council and Education has discouraged us often from having a purpose statement, and I think that some of what Senator Hahn might be objecting to is that we are putting into statute the facts that the chemicals are causing these things. And so I might suggest two things. Number one, that we delete the purpose statement, which I think isn't necessary for this. And then in addition, if you might consider changing the word recommend an education campaign to consider allowing some flexibility within the working group that they may not choose to do that at the end of the day, but would consider it. And I would understand if you wanted something stronger than that, but that's just a suggestion.
Senator Torres-Ray, what do you think of the
Thank
suggestion?
You, Senator Bonov. Mr. Chairman, I will be okay with deleting the first part, the statement part. I think that's fine because I agree with you that we don't need this. We're moving away from putting that in policy, so I think that's okay. And if I may, I would like to just leave the language the way it is. This is consistent with the House file, so I would like to talk to Representative Clark about how, because she's the one who's been working with the school and the families who are working with us on this.
So Senator Torres-Ray would move to delete lines 1.4 to 1.7, the purpose clause. All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Aye. Same sign. Prevails. Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Torres-Ray, and I appreciate Senator Bonhoeff. I think you're right that we generally try not to do the purposes, but in this subdivision 2, part of the concern I have is that what we're directing the Minnesota Commissioner and the Minneapolis School Board to undertake a very specific thing. We're saying create this committee to recommend a campaign. So they're presuming that they will do a campaign. They're, in fact, directing them to do a campaign. And secondly, that campaign intent is to tell people about the potential harmful effects of fragrances when those things have not been established. So it seems to me what we're doing is we're saying create a committee that is going to conduct a campaign to talk about the harmful effects of fragrances. And that, to me, is something that, as we acknowledge, and we don't know the science on this. And the danger to that is that if we tell people from an authoritative standpoint, well, we think there's harmful effects here and people ought to be very careful, and I think you run a certain risk with alarming people in the public without cause. And you may differ from me on my – I'm not a scientist. I don't know. But we have not undertaken any testimony about the science of this. Maybe if we want to do this, we should say let's conduct a study at the state level to investigate the scientific evidence that would suggest that fragrances are indeed harmful and should be looked at as a way of
– Members, we're going to spend just a few more minutes on this issue. Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Torres-Ray and Ms. Peterson. I'm just wondering, I apologize that I don't know the answer to this. I know that we have a number of children with allergies to peanuts, and so certain classrooms get messages sent home that we've got a child who would react severely, you know, if peanuts are around. Is that in law? Is that something a school board does? Is that something a principal does? Is there a precedent in that case that might apply for your case?
I think you're raising an excellent point, and one of the difficulties and challenges of reactions to the chemicals in fragrance is that it's subtle. I think for most children who have peanut allergies, it's clear. It's often quite a dramatic reaction. The most important instance here is the kids beneath the radar, the ones who don't know they're responding negatively. They're just getting irritable and dazed and losing focus. I think out of all of the points about the need to move forward with this, it's the children whose parents don't even know to advocate. There's a huge crowd who are subtly affected.
Senator Torres-Ray, would you consider it friendly if we entertained a motion that, as amended, that we have no recommendation, but that it be referred to the Health, Housing, and Family Security Committee, Senator Marty's, where they would discuss the health impact. That's not our bailiwick right now. You've exposed the issue, and we know there's concerns on that, but in terms of us doing a directive to the Commissioner of Health, this is not our purview, and so
Mr. Chairman,
I would suggest that.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, it's okay if you vote. You know, I want to take a vote, and I would like to take a vote in this committee. I think all of these concerns are very legitimate. You know, I would like to move the bill forward, and, you know, we will come back if the bill doesn't move forward. We will continue, because this is really going to this is not intended to put science into this or remove science from it. It's really intended to educate people and raise some awareness.
Senator
and
Torres,
the schools are responsible for that.
Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Torres-Ray, I'm wondering, too, if it would be better if we either lay this over or refer it to another committee, because actually I would like to hear from someone from the Minneapolis Board of Education. If we are, in fact, going to, you know, Senator Hansen, be directing them to establish the program, and I absolutely believe you that the representative has been in communication with the school district. But I think if we are going to, as legislature, direct them to go ahead and do this, we probably should hear from board members and other community members at the time.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Erickson-Ropes, yeah, if you want to hear it again, you know, I know we're pressing, you know, this is a time issue. I didn't even want to spend all of this time with this bill, to be honest. So if you want to vote now, or if you want to
my suggestion would it,
it's fine
that it move forward without recommendation to the Health, Housing, and Family Security Committee.
That is,
but if
Mr.
You,
Chairman and members of the committee,
call.
That's the part that I think I'm going to have some difficulty, because I don't want to really bring the issue of science, because this is just to raise awareness. In the
Senator
school.
Marty's committee has requested the bill.
Okay, so I have to go there anyway.
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, you move however you think is the most.
Well, I would suggest that Senator Torres-Ray moves that Senate File 1956 as amended be referred with no recommendation to the Health, Housing, and Family Security Committee. Further discussion? Not all in favor, indicate aye.
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 Opposed, same sign?
Aye.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Torres-Ray and Ms. Pearson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator
Thank you,
Pappas.
Members of the committee.
Senate File 1791, an issue passed by this committee in an earlier
last year.
Session.
Right, Mr. Chairman.
Last year. And
I have a delete all amendment, the A2 amendment.
Okay. Okay, and it's in the packet, is it the A2? The A2s. Senator Rummel moves the A2 amendment, author's amendment. All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Prevails. Senator
Thank you,
Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, this will put the bill in the form it was in when it passed the full Senate last year. The goal of the bill is to provide students as well as teachers with a broader understanding of the unique nature of American Indian tribal sovereignty and American Indian culture. The first part of the bill deals with K-12 academic standards and says that the commissioner must include the contributions of Minnesota American Indian tribes and communities as they relate to each of the academic standards during the review and revision of the required academic standards. So it's not just asking the commissioner to consider that upon the next review. And the second part of the bill deals with teacher training as well as continuing education programs for teachers. If you look on Section 3, we would like our teachers to also demonstrate competencies related to American Indian tribes and communities and standards for instructional practices most effective for successfully teaching elementary and secondary American Indian students. We know that we have a huge problem with graduation rates for American Indian students. And the last part of the bill, Section 5, creates a task force that includes American Indian educators, the Department of Education, the State Board of Teaching, Education Minnesota, Minnesota School Board Association, to make recommendations on the most effective way to incorporate the history and contributions of Minnesota American Indian tribes and communities into the state K-12 standards. This, several states in the Midwest, including South Dakota and Wisconsin, have enacted laws requiring that all students receive a better understanding of tribal governments from both the historical as well as the contemporary perspective. Mr. Chairman, I have a couple testifiers who will be very brief, and we just would like your consideration. This is going as a separate bill, but I did notice that with the task force language, and it does say that on page 4, line 4.34, that this is subject to the limits of available appropriations, so we don't anticipate an additional appropriation that makes it revenue neutral. But because of that language, I think it might have to go to government operations, and because of the rulemaking language.
Yes, Senator Pappas, it has been requested.
Okay. Mr. Jamie Edwards from Mille Lacs is going to begin.
Welcome.
Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jamie Edwards, the Mille Lacs of the Mille Lacs Band Government Affairs Office. It is important that our education system put into the proper perspective the history and contributions of Minnesota American Indian tribes and communities. Before Minnesota became a state, tribes from this area were negotiating treaties with the federal government. These government-to-government agreements were made with the belief that they would be adhered to by both sides forever. This historic relationship is not understood very well by a majority of Minnesotans and other folks across the United States. The level of misunderstanding is great, and its effect on our society is even greater. American Indian people across the U.S. are unfairly stereotyped by many non-Indian citizens. Most people do not understand that tribal governments are fully functional and have been maintaining their lands and governing their people for centuries. It is our opinion that a majority of this ignorance stems from the absence of information being provided in our public and private school systems. The result of this is not only destructive for American Indian people, whose full history has been left out of textbooks, but also to non-Indians who are left to make up their own minds regarding American Indians based on misinformation and stereotypes. This methodology has created pockets of intolerance across our state, resulting in great tension on or near reservations and in the urban centers where the highest concentrations of American Indian people live. And those are my short comments. And again, last year this legislation was heard and moved through the Education Policy Committee. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, then I have brief comments from Mr. Tim Brown, who is the director of the Minneapolis American Indian Education Department.
Okay, welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members, again, my name is Tim Brown. I'm the director of Indian Education for the Minneapolis Schools, and thank you for allowing me to speak on behalf of Senate File 1791. I'll be very brief. I'll distill my thoughts and ideas down to a single notion or concept, and it's that of alignment. Our American Indian students go through the public education system in somewhat of an awkward stance because our histories and stories that we know of how things played out generations ago is oftentimes vastly different from that is portrayed in the textbooks and in the public schools. And it really hits I think in middle school, 6th, 7th, 8th grades, when the data reflects this, when young people are able to think a little more critically about the big picture, and they start to see some gaps and omissions and distortions, and start to feel as if maybe the public schools are not really about them. So I really applaud this effort to be very authentic and intentional about rectifying that, not just for Indian students, but for all students in Minnesota. So thank you.
Thank you. Questions, the committee? Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify? Okay, and again, this is fairly similar to what had passed before.
Identical.
Okay. We'll entertain a motion. Senator Olsen moves that Senate File 1791, as amended, be recommended to pass and refer to State and Local Government Oversight Committee. Further discussion? Not. All in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Pappas.
Thank you very
and
much,
testifiers.
Mr. Chairman and members.
Thank you.
And Senator Fischbach. Do we have an agreement? Okay. And welcome. And I believe this is the first stop for the committee.
Yes.
And so it will need to go to health, housing, family security as well. It's been requested.
And Mr. Chair, I do have an amendment.
Okay.
It's the A1 amendment.
Sure. Senator Carlson moves the A1 author's amendment. All in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
And Mr. Chair, you know, I don't even have a bill that says the number on it. This, but Mr.
2002.
Chair, okay, 2002. Mr. Chair, this bill would help those folks who want to have their children taking naturopathic medicine during school, and it would make it clear as to what's going to happen. We made some changes, so I don't know if people can engross it quickly, but we've taken out physician prescribed, and what we've done in the second section is define naturopathic medicine. And it has to be available over the counter, and it's defined by the Federal Food and Drug and Cosmetic Act. So that, and I think that the school nurses were more comfortable with this language, so that they still have the ability, if something comes into the school that they are asked to administer to the student, and it seems odd to them, they still have the ability to question that and ask questions about it, and make sure that we're not looking at any kind of drug interactions or anything like that. So I think people are comfortable with it now. We've taken out any reference to naturopathic physicians or physician prescribed. So this is over the counter supplements, vitamins that someone would want their child to be taking. And I do have a couple of ladies from my district who.
Yes, please have them join us and give a brief statement of. And welcome. Thank you for coming to your state capitol. Please state your name.
My name is Dana Weber, and I come from the central Minnesota area. I have a son who has autism. He was diagnosed a year ago in February. He's high functioning. Therefore, then if you were to see him in action, you may not even guess that anything is really, that he wouldn't be disabled. But once you start working with him, you would start to notice some things that don't seem quite like your mainstream child. My son has been taking supplements to assist him with some of his disability. His main points that we've been trying to address to help him are anxiety, his social skills, his behavioral skills. Anxiety is probably the biggest thing for him, because when his anxiety level is up, it means he's being overstimulated somehow. We have been able to find supplements that are able to address his sensory issues, in which the neurotransmitters in his brain are misfiring and hitting roadblocks, so to speak. So when we feed his brain with the right type of food to make his brain work right, just like you would eat breakfast and you'd want to get all of your food groups, if we give his brain the food groups that his brain needs, it actually causes his brain to work better, is how we are able to see it. So what happens is, We've had our son in school since he was three, And he started with speech therapist because he was unable to speak beyond the 12th percentile of his age group. So then we got him started in Head Start right after we got him into speech therapy, and he did 4 years of well, he's been in school. This is his fifth year. His first 4 years were very traumatic for him, in which most days there were tears, not able to make friends, kind of impulsive behaviors where he might walk by the school secretary and kind of slap her in the stomach, kind of nudging her, or just things that you just can't understand. Why would you do that? Why did you do that? And he couldn't explain it. To now this year, after we started him on supplements last spring, which was towards the end of his school year, this year he is a different kid. He can make friends. I've dropped him off at school, and I've witnessed for myself him walking in and other kids flocking up to him saying, "Hey, Brayton, how are you?" And as a mom, to see that for the first time when you can't describe. I mean, from a child who never had a friend to now a child who's actually able to interact with other kids his own age, it's just a feeling you can't describe. We have encountered a number of obstacles with our school in terms of having him being able to take his supplements. His supplements work like a food. They're in and out of your body within a matter of a couple of hours, just like your breakfast that you eat doesn't maintain you until the end of the school day. That's why we feed kids school lunches. Well, my son needs to feed his brain at noon. So we have been trying to work something out with our school so that he could take his supplements at school. And at first, we encountered the, well, we can't give that to him because we don't have a doctor's note. Okay, so I went to our naturopath that we are working with and had him provide a note to the school, and I got a call back saying, no, we can't give this to him because the doctor is a naturopath. He doesn't have a DEA number. So I went to our medical doctor, and it took some doing to find a medical doctor who would support us in this, but after quite a long battle, I did find a doctor who would support us, and we were able to provide the school with a note from a medical doctor. After I provided the note from the medical doctor, then the school said, well, we can't give this to him because we can't monitor the dosages precisely enough. Both supplements are in liquid form. One is given via dropper, the other one via spray. It's a pump-action spray bottle. And I said, well, how is it any different than giving a liquid antibiotic, or how is it any different than giving an asthma inhaler? That's a spray, too. Mm-hmm. So then they couldn't argue that point anymore because they understood where it was coming from. It was kind of a tactic that they were trying to use as an excuse. Then they said, well, we can't give this to him because you don't have a pharmacy label on the bottles. I'm sorry, but finding a pharmacy label, finding a pharmacy that will put labels on these supplements is actually quite difficult, especially when we're dealing with high-grade supplements that it's not your Walmart St. John's Wort brand. You can go to Walmart and buy St. John's Wort. That's pretty easy, but that's not what my son takes. He takes something called Endotrex, and yes, we can purchase it over the counter. I can go on the internet and order it, but my pharmacy doesn't sell it, and they wouldn't label, or in order to get them to get the labels on these bottles, I would have had to ask their pharmacy to bring everything in, make a special order, and then they'd have to meet the minimum order guidelines, and it got very, very complicated, and I still wasn't guaranteed that the pharmacist would do it the second time if they lost money the first time. So I was really running into a lot of obstacles in doing so, and that's why I'm here today.
Thank you, Deb.
Mr. Chair, I actually forgot I do have a I needed to make a little amendment to my A1 amendment, so I don't know how you want to handle
has
that.
Has Ms. Sandvig left yet? Or? No, okay.
No.
Okay. The A1, we have an oral amendment?
On the A1 amendment, on line 1.6.
Okay.
And we were writing it quickly, and so that's why it kind of sounded funny, so we have to correct it. So after the word and, we would have to put after medicine. So it would say and after medicine.
Excuse
insert.
Excuse me, 1.6.
The amendment.
Can you restate
on
that?
The A1?
Oh, on
yeah.
The A1.
Oh, I'm
okay.
Sorry.
On
yeah, we A1. Can do it on the – I could do it either way.
Okay, well
– which way is easier for you, Mr. Chair?
Well –
off of the
on
bill?
The original, on the...
On the original bill?
Well, it's not there.
Well, no. We can cross-reference, but I'm not... Is it...
It has to be in the amendment.
A1. On the original bill,
okay.
On line 22, line 122,
okay.
Page 1, physician prescribed has already been removed by the A1 amendment.
Okay.
So it would say naturopathic medicine, and then before the comma, you would have to insert in the original over-the-counter container. So the new line would be naturopathic medicine in the original over-the-counter container.
Senator Erickson Ropes moves that amendment at line 1.22 after medicine insert in the original over-the-counter container. Does everyone understand that, Council?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Understand? Okay, discussion. Senator Hand.
Mr. Chairman, does that fit with the remaining language on lines 1.22 and 1.23? Does that need to be deleted as well? Or was that already done in the amendment?
Mr. Chair, that was Senator Hand. I think that was already done. Which line are you looking at?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Fischbach, the change you just made on line 1.22 of the original bill.
Yes.
You said that the except an over-the-counter labeled bottle of neuropathic medicine. Is that right?
And Mr. Chair, you're right. I guess we do have to, since we already put that in, we do have to take that out, Senator Hand. Thanks for pointing that out.
Mr.
It's supposed
Chairman,
to replace an over-the-counter labeled bottle. It's a
so.
Mr. Chair, maybe I should just say what I wanted to say, and then you guys can just vote that up or down, because there was a change in the A1 amendment, and I was supposed to make the change to the A1 before we adopted it, and it's my fault. I apologize for the confusion. So what line 122 is supposed to say is naturopathic medicine in the original over-the-counter container must be in a container with a label prepared, et cetera, et cetera.
By a pharmacist.
Okay. That would be our intent, and Senator Erickson Ropes would so move. Council, are you comfortable with that? Okay, all in favor? Is there any testimony from the audience or any opposition? All in favor, indicate aye.
This is
aye.
Just on the amendment.
On the
right.
Amendment, okay. Yes. All in favor, indicate aye.
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 Opposed, same sign.
Carries. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And we have one more witness, and we have to be out of this room in a little bit. So,
Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Welcome.
I'm just another mom, and
please state your name, and you're not just another mom.
I'm Mrs. My name is Pearl Lanen. I have two autistic children. My son is nonverbal, and with him, we use a lot of supplements. He has problems with his digestive system. And if your digestive system and all that's not working right, we're not feeding their brain. And that's basically why we're here, is we just want the schools to realize that we need their assistance to help us so we can help them teach our kids. And to get the over the pharmacy labels on these, I have to go through another state, and I get mine to get my son the things he needs at school. And there's a number of districts out there that recognize this already, and I guess we're kind of just trying to get the rest of them to recognize that there are other ways of just not just the MDs that can help our children, that we do have to use other means to provide them care and get them the best quality of life that we can provide for them.
Thank you for sharing. Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Fischbach. I had asked Senator Fischbach a little bit about this as we were passing in the hallways, and as you know, I'm a nurse, and I have, you might not know that I've done some school nursing, and I certainly believe that there are kids out there, people out there that need medicine in a non-traditional way and that sort of thing, so I'm supportive of the whole idea, and I'd be happy to sign in with Senator Fischbach on the bill. I do have some concerns about I think we need to hear from the School Nurses Association. I'm just wondering, Senator, if you'd be willing to lay this over shortly so we could get some other testifiers. Well, maybe we got somebody here. And then also the School Boards Association. As a former school nurse, my license covers the aides or the paras who are distributing the medication, and they're very particular about how you get everybody oriented to distributing and administering medication, and the amount of meds in those med drawers that the health secretaries have to pass out to kids every day is phenomenal. It's a huge amount of medication. And these are the traditional physician-prescribed meds. I'm just hearing them say in the back of my mind, you know, if we're taking on supplements, you know, what is that going to do in terms of staffing needs? And I absolutely support, you know, where you're going, and we need to recognize that there's always an exception to the rule, and there needs to be a way that we write this that will provide the medication or the supplement or whatever it is that children need during the school day. But I'm just a little concerned that we're just rushing right in right now with policy when we might have to talk a little bit more broadly about how we include this into a policy.
And members, we have at least a couple of weeks yet, 4 days or so after break, where we'll continue to process bills before deadline is an issue. And if the author, and we'll hear from Ms. Sandvig, and I'm not sure if the school board association's here, but I don't think we're going to be able to address everything in the next few minutes if those issues aren't resolved.
Well, and Mr. Chair, I will just say Linda Sandvig is here to speak on behalf of the school nurses. I have not been contacted by the school boards, school board association, and the bill went through the House.
Question.
And at least one committee over there, and there was no issue with the school boards there. But I think with the language that we have worked out, and that's why the amendment and trying to get that ready, that we resolved the issues that we had with the school nurse.
Senator Erickson-Ropes and Ms. Sandvig, if you want to approach it as well, just to give a brief statement, this would need to go to another committee as well.
And Senator Fischbach, appreciate what you've just said. The people that I checked with, Charlie Kite was just in the room back there. He's with the Superintendents Association, and he says, you know, as long as it's physician prescribed, no problem. You know, I mean, we just have to figure out if there's been a glitch in the system. But that piece now was taken out. So it still remains, I think, a challenge to us to make sure that people are getting the supplements or medication that they need during the school day. And I do think we need to include the administrators group. And then also, and if you're with the School Nurses Association, maybe that you'd relieve, you know, my anxiety a little bit. But I know that there's going to be some nurses out there worried that supplements may not be regulated in the same kind of way as regular medications, and their licenses are going to be on the line over potential issues. So I'm very anxious in working out a way to make this work for students, though. So,
Ms. Sandvig?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Linda Sandvig. I'm with the School Nurses of Minnesota. Exactly some of the questions that you raised. Two of the issues that we were concerned as the bill was originally introduced, because it did talk about a licensed naturopathic physician, which there are none that are, it's not regulated in the state as far as naturopathic physicians, and also that it there was an exception as far as the labeling. You know, basically, we're not looking at that we can take any kind of prescribing types of things from non-licensed, and we want to make sure that any medication we have is labeled. I think what the amendment does here and why we can live with this is that there was an AG's opinion that said school nurses can administer over-the-counter medications without a physician's order. But it also says that it is up to the discretion of the school nurse whether they're going to. So in a case-by-case situation, a school nurse can look at this and decide, you know, my license is exactly as you were saying, is on the line, and I do not feel comfortable. And it also says that school boards can have policies on what they do with over-the-counter medications. So this bill does nothing to change that in the Attorney General. So we don't feel that it harms as far as looking at that, since we are able to. And it says tightly that it has to be available over-the-counter and that it has to be in the original bottle.
Senator Erickson-Ropes, how do you feel now?
Simply based on the conversation that I had just earlier today, you know, with administrators, if it would be okay with you, Senator Fischbach, just to lay it over so we can have a little conversation with the other stakeholders. I appreciate very much the testimony from the school nurses. That relieves me a great deal. And yet, I just don't feel like I'm ready to go over that hurdle today, if that's all right with you. Could we continue to talk a little bit about this?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Erickson-Robes, could we possibly pass it on to the Health Committee and ideally
and then pick it up there? I'd be okay with doing that.
So that because just in case, because you said you were going to be meeting, but I don't know what the Health Committee schedule is going to look like. So if we could just deal with it there.
If we have a commitment from the author and interested parties, and this place works best on trust, and if we have that understanding. Senator Erickson-Robes moves that Senate File 2002 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to Health, Housing, and Family Security. Further discussion? If not, all in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. And thank you, witnesses, and Senator Fischbach. Members, thank you very much. We will not have our next meeting until after the break, which will be around April 10 or 11. Then we may have one or two meetings on committee deadline issues. Today there was a press conference on No Child Left Behind. There's a report that has been issued or is in the process. The thrust of that is at the federal level for changes that need to be made. Senator Lynch's amendment today that we acted on said a few things which I won't reiterate, but we will be spending a great deal more time on key issues related to that subject as well. And in deference to the time and that we've been here and a number of other issues, we'll just wait, I think, until right after break until we pursue things further. But if there's a particular issue that you want to make sure is on the radar, a bill that you have, we've had requests to not to hear bills that were requested initially, and we'll be as flexible as we can. So let us know on that as well. Thank you, and the meeting's adjourned.
Thank you.